The WLEW News and Public Affairs Department now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. We have a couple of guests in the studio today from Michigan State Police. We have Lieutenant Mitch Grigelke, commander of the Caro Post, and we have Special First Lieutenant Public Information Officer David Kaiser from the State Police. State Police just had a celebration, 98 years, I understand, recently. We're going to talk about that and how they've changed through the years and how the troops are handling it around here since the big changeover to one post instead of three. So welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Well, there have been a lot of changes. I mean, if you look from where the State Police began in 1917 to where we are today and recently is... late as 2011 when we consolidated some posts throughout the state to enact our mobile policing plan. It's been a lot of changes that have benefited the public in a lot of many different ways. We do a lot of targeted crime enforcement based on historical data that we now have access through dashboards. And that information comes from agencies throughout Michigan that report, you know, what they do on a given day. So, you know, the days of checking into service and waiting for a call and in the meantime, patrolling, trying to be proactive has kind of changed because now we have historical information that we can look at and determine where it is we should be deploying our resources to get the best bang for our buck.
You use the term dashboard, and people think of the State Police. They're going to think of the one in your car. And this is actually like a page on a computer screen that basically gives you a whole lot of information in one-stop shopping.
It is. All law enforcement agencies report to the Michigan Crime Information Center, and it's basically a mainframe in Lansing. And for example,
it's not HAL, is it? It's
no,
not going to go
no.
crazy on it.
No. You know, troopers have what we refer to as online daily reporting now. You know, back a few years ago, they had paper dailies that they would track what they did in a given shift. And now that information is entered electronically every day at the end of their shift, and it's automatically uploaded to this computer system at night. So we have a computer database where all of that information is collected throughout the state. And we can drill that down based on where we're located within the state, whatever our area of responsibility is, to see what's going on in our area. And historically, what had happened the same time a year, 2 years prior to that. So we have a lot of information available very quickly that took us a long time to gather prior to this new technology. So.
And I would imagine a lot of this is done seasonally because the crime is different in the summer in the thumb than it is in the winter because we have a huge influx along shorelines and that of people coming up, and it's a whole different dynamic around here.
Well, we look at, you know, as post commanders and district commanders and Lieutenant Kaiser, I think we look at it every week, if not daily. So we have a pretty good indication of trying to figure out what is going on. There's some predictive information in there with traffic crashes that'll kind of give us an idea of where best to deploy our resources. So you're right, you know, everything changes with the times and the seasons, but we can look at that daily and drill it down. Let's see what's happening today that happened the same time last year and see if there's a place that we should be deploying our resources.
Town festivals, all these things must come into play as the year goes through because that's where things start to happen.
Absolutely. And you know, we haven't removed the human element. You know, many of our troopers, we still live in our communities and our kids go to school in the communities, and we understand, at least we think we do, what's going on in the communities. So we don't just look at those computer systems and say this is what we think is going to happen. We interact and we know where the festivals are and what's going on and you know, any issues that may have happened last year that may happen again this year. So we take everything into account.
Now it almost sounds like the officer is getting into a spaceship. I mean, you've got computers, you've got links to this network, you've got the dashboard that's not just the dashboard with the speedometer, but you got the other ones you're all dealing with. Is it becoming more and more tech involved?
Very much so. Today's technology in these patrol cars is phenomenal. You can take a trooper that years ago could only write reports and do things from an office. Everything we can do from an office, you can do from a patrol car. It's part of a regional policing plan. It keeps our troopers more mobile. They've got everything from the computer, which is you can access the internet and other dashboards. We have technical information available to us. If we stop somebody on the road that doesn't have a driver's license, you have the ability to look that person up on different databases, whether it's Secretary of State or through Department of Corrections. We have digital fingerprint scanners, where if you have no ID and are being less than truthful with the trooper...
No one's ever that way with the troopers. No.
You can actually put a finger on this digital machine, and through biometrics, in a matter of a minute or two, you'll have a positive identification on this person if they've ever been fingerprinted anywhere. It's just incredible technology.
Now you talk about how the officers can do all of this from their car. I always thought a little bit of the police work was what they shared in the office with each other. That because you have to have one guy being able to tell another that, you know, this stuff's been going on over here, and that is that, you know, something that still happens?
Absolutely. It's with this regional policing plan, most of our posts have a sergeant and six or seven troopers that are part of a squad, and they work together as a team. They often will share information with the shift before them or the shift after them. In other communities around us, a lot of times the troopers will attend the shift briefing at the local police department. So we have a partnership with our local law enforcement as well, and they all seem to work together. They're all on the same team, even though they may wear a different uniform.
Because there's a lot to be said. You know, you talk about the human factor. The human interaction is not only good with the public, but it's good between officers.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. The state police is getting more and more tech. We keep reading the stories about there's now a helicopter going to be in at MBS Airport, which would be close to our region if you needed it. They're talking drones. I mean, is this the way things are going? Is a little more tech involved?
It is, and they are using the technologies that becomes available. In regards to the helicopter being based at the MBS Airport in Freeland, that is happening now. And what that has done for the people in the community, instead of the troopers driving from the Tri-City Post down to Lansing, getting in a helicopter and then flying all the way up to the community here in the Thumb or Tri-City area, working for a few hours, setting down for fuel, flying for another hour or so, and then driving all the way back down to Lansing. By having it here local, we'll have a much better response time, and it'll better serve the people in the community. You're also going to save a ton of fuel.
And is that mainly for, like, watching traffic on I-75, or do you use this in search and rescues and manhunts, or all of the above?
Yes. it is used as part of the Secured Cities Partnership, which is the cities of Saginaw and Flint, where we've partnered with Flint City Police Department, Saginaw Police Department. It also is used in the surrounding communities where you have somebody where a person's missing. Maybe they suffer from dementia or a medical issue, and they've walked away from a home. And they're lost, especially with the cold winters we have here. You can use this helicopter. It's available to any agency, free of charge. You just have to call and ask. They can respond within minutes. They have a lot of technical equipment on this helicopter, things like a flare system. It's a forward-looking infrared. It picks up body heat. They've got we call it the midnight sun. It's that bright light in the sky that shines down. And it lights up the woods below or the roadway below. It's been very successful in the community in locating lost hunters, lost people with medical conditions. It's just a huge resource, and it's good to have that available. It's good to have it close.
You had talked about our mission, and has it changed? And, you know, our mission is to provide the highest quality law enforcement and public safety services throughout Michigan, and that hasn't changed. And having all these resources available to every agency, you know, our focus is public safety and whatever we can bring to the table to make for safe communities for our citizens. So we're going to continue with our mission, and as technology changes, hopefully we have the ability to implement that and use that if it's for the benefit of public safety.
When they talked about from the wire service, when they got the permission to start testing with the drones and that, do you get a different perspective from above? I mean, is that really helpful in accident reconstruction and stuff? Can you see a different debris pattern coming out that you might not see from the ground so readily?
You know, I'm not an expert on our unmanned aircraft, but I can tell you from being up in a helicopter, you do these things, see things from a lot different perspective when you're up above. I do know you being able to utilize this device, whether it's a helicopter or the unmanned aircraft, to get those photographs from up above would give you a bird's eye view, and that could very much help in an investigation later down the road.
Yeah, what's nice about that, you know, like a snapshot from the sky, you don't have to move any of those vehicles involved in that accident scene to get a clear indication of where it is they're placed in the accident scene. And that's very important if it's a fatal accident or, you know, a municipality may be involved or whether road commission and there's litigation further on down the road to be able to place those vehicles exactly where they occurred. And sometimes what that unmanned flying aircraft will do is allow us to quickly remove those vehicles or in a quicker manner remove those from the roadway so we can open it back up and have for safe traveled roadways. A snapshot is a lot quicker, or several pictures, than an individual going to each specific vehicle and measuring those things out. Not to say that won't occur in conjunction with it, but I think it's definitely going to be a benefit to law enforcement as we move forward.
And a lot cheaper than renting satellite time.
Looking back just a year ago with all the floods we had here in Michigan, that would have been a great resource back then to fly that unmanned aircraft over the scenes and give you a better idea of the extent of damage.
Even for the responders that were trying to get down to specific areas in Detroit and suburbs to provide assistance, to be able to have had that in the air to know that, you know, you shouldn't take this exit because it's flooded. And even though MDOT has an online program, you know, I'm not sure that all those were working at the time. So
they were coming in pretty fast and yeah. Furious, and people were causing traffic jams trying to avoid one thing and creating another because they still wanted to get home.
Right.
So, does this, from the helicopters and that and all the imaging, does this create, you know, a whole new layer of problems for the state police? Because there are people like us in the media who would want this, and you got to know what you can release, what you can't. Is this all the kind of things that the office has to start dealing with now, figuring out what's releasable, what isn't, all that kind of stuff?
You know, the state police are very transparent, and everything we have, if the media asks, we'll do our best to answer the questions. There were some concerns with the unmanned aircraft initially when we started using it. I can tell you we are the first agency to actually get the FAA approval to have an unmanned aircraft, and it's new territory. We are learning as we go forward, but as an agency, we are very transparent, and if they have a question, I'd encourage them to ask. If I don't know the question, I can get it for you.
Yeah, we kind of went through that here with wind energy. We were the experiment, and everyone was using our ordinances and stuff to see what worked and what didn't. So I understand the process. Are the troop numbers up, down, or are we pretty stable? I mean, we hear a graduating class, but a lot of times we hear that also there's retirements going on, and you get to, you know, there may have been a gap where there weren't a lot of recruit class, and you're going to have a lot of retirees and a fresher model of officers coming through.
Well, I'm not familiar with what the actual numbers are. I haven't looked in a long time. I can tell you the last few years, it seems like we've had consistent recruit schools that are running. But, you know, in the course of time, you always have people that retire, and you always have new people that are employed, and it's a constant changing thing. But
we are recovering from a couple of years ago. Times were very hard for Michigan. Budgets were tight. We lost a lot of troops through retirement, through attrition, and we hadn't had a school in many years. We are currently, with our new governor, we have been able to have schools on a regular basis. This has been wonderful. We can use the help, but we're not back to where we were numbers-wise back in the late 2000s, 2009, 2010. We're struggling to get back there.
But a lot of what you're doing with the technology and that is to make yourself more efficient so that, you know, you're making up for a little of that. You were talking about doing the reports and stuff from your car and that. So you could still be doing, you know, traffic monitoring while you're doing this, as opposed to having to be coming back to get to a typewriter at the post.
Absolutely.
So you're actually getting more time out on the road with the same amount of...
That is correct. With the with all the latest technology we have, people are definitely getting more bang for the buck.
And... do you see anything on the horizon? I mean, most police cars that I see around here, they have, you know, the dash cams. Everyone's talking about the personal cams. Do you see that coming for the state police?
I can tell you the body cams, the Michigan State Police are looking at those. They are being tested. We're testing a couple different brands and models right now. They're being tested at different locations throughout the state. I know they are being used in southern Michigan. We want to make sure that when we do finally decide on a body cam, that it's the best product out there and we get the best results.
I mean, the ones in the cars, they normally don't have any kind of tracking to follow you. It's a static shot, whereas the body cams can offer audio and everything. You know what's going on. There's no coming back to somebody who says you did this and it's you said he said, and it's right there.
That's true. Our cars do have cameras in them. They are digital. The officers do wear microphones. They should have audio with that. However, if you step outside the front of the patrol car, then you're going to be out of the camera. So if you step into a residence to investigate a family matter, you're not going to have the video coverage where a body cam would offer that advantage.
It's sad to say you got to go that route, but it also helps protect the officer and the agency as well, because you know what happened.
Absolutely.
It's not in question. It's not interpretation. Look at it on the monitor, and everything goes from there. So, but all of that, again, there's training, there's costs, and then there's how to disseminate it, how to archive it. All these kinds of things have to be dealt with. It's not as simple as people think.
You can't go to a box store and you know, look in that box and decide that, you know, that's
you
the best
Velcro
body cam.
A GoPro on you?
You just can't do it. You have to look at storage. You have to look at quality. You have to look at lifespan. And, you know, all of those things come into play. And, you know, technology, even as great as it is, it still has its failures now and again. So, obviously, we want to make sure that if we go that route, we're going to get the best product that we can for the money that we spend so that it's there for the long term.
We have to look at having a device where the batteries are going to last 10, 12-hour shift, that the device that we get is going to be able to withstand extreme cold temperatures, wet conditions. And then once you're done with that device for the day, you have to have a place to store that video. And when you're talking the number of troopers we have in the state of Michigan, being able to store all those videos from each and every trooper for a period of time, that's quite an expense as well.
You have to pay for the servers and everything else that's going to store it, and then you have to have somebody who has some inkling of how to, you know, organize it so you can find what you need when you want it.
Because it's more complex than one would think at first blush. It takes a little bit of time to do the research so we get a quality product.
Do you see it as being a permanent archive, or just, you know, if there's no problems, you know, a year down the road they may be able to...
You know, that's going to be made.
That's another one of those decisions.
One of those decisions that'll have to be researched, and it'll be made. I imagine they're going to have an archive. They'll have some standard procedure policy in place where it's kept for a certain amount of time.
Because you just can't save everything. We've tried that here, and you keep buying more drives and more drives and more drives. I understand that there's efforts to try and get more women among the ranks of the state police.
There has been, and I think the department's done a tremendous job at that, especially the last few years, and there have been recruiting events around the state. I think just a couple of weeks ago there was a recruiting event in Troy, because one of my troopers
went down there.
There was a big one going down
in downstate that, you know, that they're looking to get more women involved, and is it more of a fact that they just don't seem to think that, oh, this might be my career, or are there other factors?
I'm sure there are other factors. Our role, what we bring to those recruiting events is we want the public to understand that we're a diverse agency, and we work in a diverse state, and we want the face of our agency to be as diverse as our state. So we try to make sure that all the information is made available, and we're always recruiting. We're always looking for good people in the state police, and anything that we can do to bring anybody to the table that wants to sit down and talk about becoming a trooper, they need only stop at the post or pick up the phone or go to the website for the state police, and we'll be more than happy to sit down and try to recruit them to come to the agency.
One of our biggest competitions right now is every other police department in the state of Michigan is trying to do the same thing. You know, and if you don't want to move outside your hometown, if you're worried about that, a lot of people are looking at their hometown police departments. So the state police aren't the only ones looking for some diversity. I think everybody's looking right now, and they're all recruiting heavy.
So is that kind of a good thing or a bad thing that you might not be close to home? I mean, I always wondered, you know, if you were too close to home and you knew everybody, whereas with the state police, you could go from Bad Axe to Escanaba, and you don't know a soul unless your family ever had a cottage up there.
You know, one of the best things our department has done in recent years with the recruiting effort is back in the day, we never knew where you were going to be. Unwritten rule was you wouldn't be within 100 miles of your hometown. Well, the things have changed, and now they're trying to put you within that 100 miles of your hometown, so you don't have to sell a house. You don't have to move the kids from school. Your spouse doesn't have to get a new job. So they've taken a lot of that into consideration, and most of the recruits going to school now, before they go in, they'll know a rough area, a geographic area, or where they're going to be. And it's they're trying to put them within that range where they could commute from their home to their new post. And that's been a big help. So that's some changes we've made with the economy in Michigan. It's hard to just expect somebody to uproot a whole family and leave.
Well, and you know, with that, we want people that know their communities, and some of the issues that we've dealt with secure cities around the state, you know, we would like to recruit people that know those communities, that are from those communities, because, you know, our efforts are to make them a safer community, and sometimes those are the best folks to have to bring that message forward. So
who knows it better than somebody that was born and raised in that community? You know, then you have an officer that not only works there, but he also lives there, his kids go to school there, and I think that's just a good job fit.
Would people be surprised at the education most troopers have? As I understand it, pretty much you already have a degree before you even go to recruit school these days.
You know, most of the recruits, I think, now tend to have degrees. In the past, I think you had a significant portion of recruit schools over the past years that maybe had military experience. Not everybody has a degree. You know, a lot of people have on-the-job training, and they get trained through our recruit school. That's a 20 to 22 week intense, you know, process.
Military style.
It is. We're a paramilitary organization, and we have a chain of command, and I think that, you know, in years past, that drew a lot of prior military people. They understood that. They may have had basic training in one of the branches of the military, and it was kind of an easier transition than maybe someone right out of high school without having had the opportunity to do that. But I think we have a diverse group. A college degree does not mean you're not going to be hired by the state police. I think if you apply, you're going to have a good opportunity like everybody else.
And is this a job like most today where, continuing education throughout it?
I mean, it is. We're continually
laws change, learning. The rules change, and, you know, you have to be up on that, and you have to be able to translate it to what you're doing on the road.
And actually, it's not a job. This is a career. And when you come into this, you have to have an innate need and belief that you're here to help people. That's what you want to do. And with, you know, changing legislatures and changing laws and society issues, you have to daily make sure that you're aware of what's going on around you to stay up with that. And our department has an ongoing learning process with everything from technology to new laws. So.
And do you find most people who go into the state police are, well, for lack of a better term, lifers? They you don't have a lot, you know, I'm going to go off to this agency, to this agency. They kind of stick with the state police?
I think that's true. I think that most of the people that spend the 22 weeks going through our state police academy, then they get out of the academy, they go through a extensive 17-week field training officer program. And then for the next 4 years after that, we'll send them back down the training academy for a week each year to get more advanced training to keep them abreast of the laws. It's an investment in their career. It's an investment in their life. We don't see too many people that come for a very short time and then leave.
You know, and they form a bond. And that bond in recruit school, much like the bond I believe that you have in the military, and having had the experience of basic training in military, I think it's much like that. I think it's easy to stay. Not many people, it's been my experience, leave. We do have people that leave that decide this is not for them, and it's not for everybody, but I think it's a small percentage.
Because you see a lot of things, you know, we just think of, you know, traffic stops and such, but you guys go into everything, and some of it's not pretty, and it can affect you.
And that is one of the nice things with the state police, is we have a lot of different resources available to us. We actually have doctors, psychologists, if you will, down in Lansing, back at our capital where we came from, and they're available to everyone in the troops, whether the trooper's involved in a critical incident, maybe he's been to a horrendous traffic accident where there's been some people severely injured or a little one killed. One of the horrific things you may have seen you're having trouble dealing with, we have those doctors available to us, and they've been a great resource. They've helped a lot of our officers that have been in these situations.
People often just see the uniform. They don't see the person inside.
That's true.
They have feelings and a full set of them.
Yep.
That's true. Almost every one of these officers, I mean, they have a wife, they have children, they have families just like you. We put the uniform on. It's a job we do. But, you know, sometimes these tragic events we go to, they involve children a lot of times the same ages as the ones we have at home. And it does hit home. And it is difficult. It is hard to live with. And they have doctors and resources available to us to help us get through those times.
You know, one of the resources our agency has is a chaplain corps. Throughout the state, and to become a Michigan State Police chaplain, they have to go through a process to do that. And every post, I believe, in the state has a chaplain. We have two assigned at the Carroll Post. They every month come in and choose to ride with a trooper, and they're there and they're talking, and I talk with the chaplain. We'll stop in and just say how are things going, and you know, so there are a lot of resources available to the employees to deal with those significant issues.
Does everyone start off in a car, or do you sometimes jump? I mean, there's different careers in the state police, public information officer, you know, there's all different ways you can go, and you're still in the state police. Do you all start off in the car and then go from there, or do you go in with certain ideas, I want to be this?
Everybody, I think, when they join the state police has a dream where they'd like to end up. Everybody out of recruit school is assigned to a post. And then they work the road. You learn the basics. You build that solid foundation. From there, as opportunities come up, it's posted to an intranet for us, whether it's a canine handler, join our emergency support team, our dive team, a community service trooper, one of these other specialties. In order to be eligible to apply for that, you've got to first be a successful trooper and have built that foundation. Once you have the foundation, then there's lots of other opportunities and doors available to you, whether it's a narcotics team, an auto theft team, a violent crimes task force. One of the beautiful things about the Michigan State Police is you can do any one of these different jobs and you have the same employer. So every couple of years, if you wanted to do something different, you can apply for that. That option's available to you. So in your career of 25 years with the State Police, you can do so many different jobs and have a lot of diversity and never leave the department.
And I suppose they would let you know if, you know, you're looking for this job, well, maybe you need to go to a community college and get a refresher course in this so you're easing in here easier, because some of these are pretty specialty.
Absolutely. Even our chopper pilots that fly for the Michigan State Police, they're troopers. They started off on the road just like everybody else. The members on our SWAT team, our dive team, the uniformed officers at the crime lab, they all started on the road out of an academy. They all came from the same place. That's that common bond we all share.
Does that help, like, you as the commander in Garrow, that everybody who comes in there knows you once were in a car, you once patrolled the roads and did all of that?
Absolutely. I mean, we speak from experience. And when we try to teach and mentor the new people that come into the department, we like to think that they understand that when we try to teach them something, they know that it's because something that we probably encountered in our career early on. You know, we do have some civilian employment that's not enlisted, not uniform. We have a lot of support in our labs. You know, there we have a lot of lab analysis throughout the state that do require specific college education to do their very specific jobs. So there's a lot of things available to a lot of different people that go beyond wearing the uniform. But everybody that we refer to as enlisted that starts as a trooper, they do have a lot of things available to them as they gain experience. They all know, you know, like Lieutenant Kaiser said, if they have dreams, they know where they want to be, and they can do the research and figure out what it is they need to do to get there. But we've, between the two of us, have had, I'm sure, a very diverse career and have taken advantage of a lot of those opportunities. But the beauty of the state police is you can go anywhere in the state of Michigan, any work site for the state police, and the rules are going to be the same. And we've all come up the same way through recruit school. That's where it all began.
We have a lot of our people that they decide that when they come in, when they quit being happy being a trooper and they want to move on to a different experience, then they'll do that. We have a lot of our people retire at 25, 30 years as a trooper. They still love it. They still love putting on a uniform and coming to work, and it makes them smile each and every day. Therefore, they still troop. That's what they enjoy doing. They enjoy getting in that car every day and going out on the road and just helping people.
Well, and you need those kind of people because they're the ones who train the new ones who come in.
Absolutely.
You want the people with a lot of experience who have the street smarts and just know how to make it work, as opposed to, you know, one who's only been there 3 years teaching someone who just came out of school.
You'll talk to most of our command officers in the state police. When you ask them what was their best job, their most favorite job in all their career in the whole state police, almost every one of them is going to tell you being a troop.
You know, troopers and sergeants, they are the front line. I mean, they keep everybody's family safe, including our own. So you can't underestimate what it is they do. And I can tell you, like Lieutenant Kaiser said, that was the best job I had in the department was when I was a trooper. So
you've done a lot of things with technology to make the guy in the car have all this information. Was that kind of held back until we had the infrastructure in the area? Because, I mean, we haven't had 4G and all the kind of things that we rely on a lot. Or do you do this all through your towers anyway?
You know, that we are evolving and we're changing. And as some of those issues are addressed, whether it be additional tower sites or better cell phone connectivity based on where we're at in the state, we seem to have that technology that follows pretty close and pretty quick behind. As soon as we have the ability to do that,
we being a real problem because it's mountainous and, you know, there's a lot of cost to put something up for four people.
If you talk to our people in our communication sections, one that work our radios and work on our computers, they will tell you the Upper Peninsula of Michigan has been a challenge. And it has to do with just what you were saying, with the cell phone towers and just the technology moving north.
But here, we've kind of moved along pretty quickly, and everybody can pretty much do anything they want on their phones, and you can do just about anything you want to do in your cars. And that allows for a quicker response time, and lets the guy in the car know what he's dealing with faster, too.
Absolutely. It makes for a safer environment, not only for the officers.
You know, I don't want to be sexist about this.
No, we have men and women and people of varying colors and varying cultural backgrounds. We have a little bit of every part of Michigan in our department, but it does. You know, we want the goal for all of our troopers and law enforcement out there from all agencies to go home at the end of the night, and one of the ways to try to make sure that happens is to make sure that we get them the information they need to do their job as quickly and efficiently as we can. And I think that, you know, most agencies are usually stymied only by the budget, and I don't know that our department is much different in that respect, but we've certainly come a long ways in the last few years.
About 2 years from now, you're going to have a great big 100. Are there big plans for that? Have you heard any inklings coming down from the top, or do you just anticipate it and wait for the ride as it comes?
Well, I can tell you from experience that I'm going to anticipate that it's going to be a celebration at every work site in the state for a 100-year anniversary. It's a one-time event. We're only going to be 100 one time. I know our department specifically is in plans, so we're working on a Michigan State Police Museum, and we're trying to get that up and running, and they're doing fundraising to make that happen. So I anticipate that'll be a year-long celebration, at least within the department, and I'm sure the media will be made well aware of that.
You mentioned the museum. Is the department really working on recording and retaining its history?
Well, I think they are. I think in the last number of years, contacts within the agency have been pretty clear to try to find historical and save historical items from the past and send those into Lansing so that we can retain that. If you go to our State Police Training Academy, you'll see some of those historical items on display, older vehicles and uniform items and things like that.
Before they were blue?
You know, I'm not sure. There is a uniform I thought on display up there, and I don't recall. I don't think it's the same color blue.
I believe it's a different color.
Yeah. But we've also had a retired inspector a number of years ago wrote a history book about the Michigan State Police. So we have some of that history saved in print now, and I actually have that book on my desk. So I think the department, you have to know your history and you have to know where you come from, and I think we're doing a pretty good job of trying to retain that history.
Well, appreciate you taking time with me today. Did we miss anything you wanted to talk about?
You know, just wanted to let everybody know that, you know, we're involved in community service, and tomorrow night at the Big Boy restaurant just west of Carroll from 5 to 7 o'clock, I think, I and community service trooper will be at the Big Boy, and we'd invite the public to stop in there and just have a conversation, share a cup of coffee or a pop. And, you know, we wanted to provide an atmosphere and a location and time where it doesn't have to be a major event in somebody's life or a time of crisis, just to sit down and have a conversation, maybe ask any questions you have, or if you're interested in state, please stop in and see us. So we'll be there tomorrow night, and then next week at May 13th on Wednesday from 9 a.m., to probably about 11 a.m. we'll be at the Big Boy in Sandusky, and we'd invite the public again if you want to stop in and just pull up a chair and have a conversation with us.
Find out if you have someone interested in the state police as a career, how they get their foot in the door, and all of those kinds of things.
Absolutely.
One of the best resources we have out there right now is if they were to go to the Michigan State Police website. They have a ton of information on the Michigan State Police, as well as the recruiting efforts and any information they may have.
And tell you when classes are coming up, some qualifications, how to get the forms in, all these types of things.
Well, and I think our application process did it not just go online, so we've made it even easier to apply through that website.
Yeah. And it's so simple nowadays, until you get stopped. Then it's not simple anymore. Well, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Our guests today on the program have been Mitch Fregelke, lieutenant from the commander of the State Police Post in Carroll, which covers Huron, Sanilac, Tuscola counties. We kind of closed the post, but they're really open because I see officers in there once in a while. So they're just not manned like they used to be, but they're available for the officers to use. And also Special First Lieutenant Public Information Officer David Kaiser from the Michigan State Police. I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.